Remember the passion you felt doing that particular thing you always loved to do when you were a kid? Whether it was to laugh or to love or to explore, to play or create. Those passions weren't just you being a kid. They were gifts of clarity. They're the desires of your heart authentically expressed. Hi, I'm Courtney Cole, and this is the Love Freak Podcast, where we remember who we really are and what we've come to this planet to create. It's here we make a choice, love or fear. It's here we choose to vibrationally realign ourselves with the truth of our essence, love, 528 hertz, the love frequency, which therefore allows us to realign with conscious healing, authenticity, and creativity. Don't freak out. This is your true nature.
Hey guys, I'm Courtney Cole, and welcome to this week's episode of the Love Freak Podcast. Today is such a special day for me because I am bringing you one of my most favorite authors, spiritual teachers, Mr. Paul Selig. He's a legend in my opinion, you guys. He's a psychic, a teacher, and an award-winning author. And he and his work with the guides in their channeled text have literally changed my life. And you may be wondering, what's a channel text and who are the guides? And we're going to get to all of that. But basically, long story short, Paul's a clairaudient. And for those who are unfamiliar with the term, that translates to clear hearing. He's literally able to hear messages from a source that is known to him as the guides, and he dictates their messages into books. So how cool is that? And truly, these messages are not of this world. The level of knowledge and the level of clarity and unity that these messages offer in order to awaken the divine self in each of us is truly life-changing. So Paul, to say that it's an honor for you to be on this podcast is literally an understatement. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm glad to be here.
So real quick, Paul, can you explain to those who might not really know your work who the guides are and how you've kind of come to know them and connect with them?
Well, I mean, they're teachers. The guides I work with call themselves teachers. They've described themselves in different ways. It's not like I'm just talking to some dead person on the other side who has a couple of ideas. Guides work as a collective, and they say they've been doing this for a very, very long time. They're only called guides because my ex years ago, when my ex found out I could do this stuff, used to say, ask the guides this, ask the guides that. So that's the only reason. The guides, it was convenient. It's not, they're real, that they could care less what they're called. Once in a while, they'll introduce themselves and they'll say, you know, if you need a name, you may call us Melchizedek, which is a priesthood and an old name. But truthfully, I just know them as the guides. There's one that I see visually periodically, who I think is quite wonderful to look at. And you know, they've come to teach. So they're here doing this job, and I'm really just the radio that the broadcast seems to flow through. So they've done 9 books now through me. The 9th will be out next summer, but they just finished that dictation about a month ago here on Maui, where I've been for the last 7 months. So that's it. They come to teach.
Wow, that's incredible. And did you always feel like you've always been able to hear messages or like that, or did something have to kind of happen in you to be able to open yourself up to that kind of teaching?
A lot happened to me. You know, I think that there was a spiritual yearning or longing that was in me that I couldn't have acknowledged because I was raised sort of an atheist and I didn't go for much of the woo-woo. 25, a bunch of stuff happened. I had been a sort of hard partying, you know, playwright. I was about a year out of Yale, and I was doing quite well, at least on the surface in the world, and I hit a real wall, and I started opening up to the possibility of more out of sheer necessity, not because I thought it would be nice to get spiritual. But anyway, I had some experiences that left me opening sort of psychically at the same time. And that was a surprise. I quit drinking and, you know, I was a lot more receptive than I thought I was. I was almost a live wire for stuff. And I had been, in retrospect, probably self-medicating that level of sensitivity. I studied a form of energy healing after a few years of this to get a context for what I was, you know, learning and going through. And I was volunteering at a center for people that were living with life-challenging illnesses doing energy work, as I had been taught. And I found when I had my hands on people's bodies, I started to get messages for them. So everything, when it would pan out, when I would say, who's Aunt Alice? And they'd say, you know, well, my Aunt Alice is, you know, living in my apartment and she's a pain in the ass, she's driving me crazy. Once I would get the verification again and again and again, I just began to trust it. And I think what I was doing was, you know, tuning into a station as a radio that was bringing me information to help other people. So this stuff has primarily always come in service to others more so than to myself. But that was the beginning. And then I held a group that met in my apartment in New York City for about 18 years. People would come once a week. I'd set up some chairs. I'd listen. The energy would come through because the guides were always working with energy in very direct and palpable ways. And that went on until they started delivering the whole books through me. And there was a point in around, I guess it was 2008, where they actually began to lecture through me, which was new. And that actually came after I quit smoking. I'd been a heavy cigarette smoker up until then. And once that was out, I was even more wide open. So it's been a process of opening and refining, and I suppose developing the skill, because in some ways I think of this as a skill, and the refinement seems to be the ability to hold the station in order to, you know, unimpeded, which is really
wow. That's I really like that in that, or that image of holding a station. You know, it really is all about frequency, which is what you talk about, and being able to kind of keep yourself receptive to that. And, you know, this is the Love Freak podcast. I'm all about frequency. I'm all about love. You know, this whole podcast is inspired by the love frequency, which is 528 Hertz. You know, I just, the whole concept of frequency is the foundation of everything, you know. And is that something that kind of the guides pointed out to you, or did you always kind of know, were you always kind of like a science guy to be like, oh, okay, frequency. Yeah. This makes sense of how it kind of comes through.
No, not at all. You know, the guides don't speak about science through me. And I think partially because I don't have a vocabulary for it. When the guides speak about things that might fall under that heading, they tend to speak in musical terms. They speak of octaves as opposed to dimensions. And they say that an octave is comprised of low and high notes, and that everything we experience on this plane is in tone, in vibration, you know, in sound. But they speak of that in terms of the notes on the piano, you know.
Absolutely.
A song can be sung in another octave up into infinity. So we're used to this one here, which is the reality that we confirm collectively, but that as we lift our vibration, we're in agreement or vibrational accord to the octaves that are above. And that's when all the real stuff starts to happen.
Mm, that's so fascinating. And I relate to that so much as a kid. Like I was always, I'm a musician as well. And I record all my music in 528 Hertz. Like I'm all about the healing and the frequency, whether that means anything or not. But science, I definitely would not consider myself a science buff at all, but I've always been interested in quantum physics when it comes to frequency, because, you know, scientifically we know that at the very fundamental level of nature is the atom, and it's vibrating. And when something's vibrating, it has a frequency, you know, and frequency is the rate at which something vibrates, you know? So it's just, you know, I'm a musician, so I really appreciate, you know, the way that the guides speak, especially in your most recent book, Alchemy, when you do use the musical terms. It makes so much sense. You talk about being in accord with everything around us in terms of resonance and transposing into the higher octave. Yes. You know, it's a pretty beautiful thing, in my opinion, to recognize such a scientific and a musical term like frequency and see how it corresponds in the spiritual world. And I definitely see all of it when I in creating what we know as music. But you know, it's neat to think that everything in this world is one big musical composition. It kind of gives me chills just thinking about it. Do you see a significance when it does come to music? Do you see a significance in like our standard tunings, like recording music in 528, or our standard tuning is 440 Hertz? Do you see any significance or relevance in our music today?
I mean, I don't, but only because I'm not it's nothing that I'm getting messages about and I'm not aware of. That's not to say that it's not doing wonderful things in the world.
Sure.
But they do tone through me periodically. There's times when there's just this big sound that comes out, this big sound. And when it happens, it seems to be happening with overtones. I'm not a singer, so it's sort of surprising that you can hear sort of this weaving of almost like musical tones. And when they do that with groups, they do that to attune and to lift the group. It's another way that they work when they work beyond language. So I'm certain that everything that you're exploring has a place in this. It's just not the vocabulary that I would probably give it because I don't really have it. I don't know it.
Absolutely. I'm sure it all corresponds in some way, shape, or form. But you often talk about the small self. Or the ego self versus the divine self or the Christed self. The small self, you know, being who we think we are based off of our perceptions and our experiences, you know, as opposed to the Christed self, who is the truth of who we are in love and frequency. And I kind of grew up in the Christian world. You say you were more of an atheist. I grew up in the Christian world. And, you know, it felt very uncomfortable to me to think of myself as like the Christed self. It scared me in a sense of like the thought that, you know, I'm going against God by saying that, but I'm starting to understand the message of Jesus kind of in a new way and starting to realize that, you know, I or we as a collective, in fact, are not small unless we allow ourselves really to be. And we possess this power that is the Christ. You know, it says that in scripture, it says that the Christ is in each of us. But the Christ is not just one person, you know, as we think like Jesus to be the one and only Christ, like it seems like the guides are saying the Christ is a consciousness, a mentality, an alignment that we can all achieve. And I'm starting to kind of understand that that's kind of what Jesus meant when he meant, follow me, follow my example. We don't just experience the kingdom of God when we die. It's available to us in every moment, you know, through our choice to align as it. And his teachings kind of, you know, show us how to get there. So I'm just wondering, according to the guides, like, what is the Christ and how can we achieve this state of consciousness?
Well, their definition of Christ, which they gave early on, is the aspect of the creator that seeks to be realized in material form. It really is who and what we are. So it's the divine spark. Sometimes they call it the monad. And the monad, I understand to be, you know, the singular that's of the plural, the piece of the whole, you know, knows itself in union with the whole. So, you know, they said early on in their teachings, you don't become the Christ becomes you. And that's where they sort of got the small self in its proper place. Now they speak about a level of unification with the divine, where the divine becomes its expression through you, not at the cost of who you are, but with the truth of who you really are. So the guides have often said that the divine self or the Christ itself or the true self, they call it all these different things, is the essence and the truth of who you are. And they say, when they talk about Jesus, which isn't a lot, but they say he's participatory to these teachings and that energy is present in them. And it's a true teaching. They say the teaching of Jesus is a true teaching, but they say Jesus realized the Christ, hence he became a doorway to others, to it. And the guides say about the work that they're doing is that we become a doorway or we become a portal. And this isn't done through effort. It's through a recognition of the truth of who we already are. So the guides say, they talk about something called the upper room, which I didn't know was in scripture when they started to bring it through. It was just something
absolutely.
I thought. Somebody sent me the gospel singer Mahalia Jackson singing a hymn called In the Upper Room. I almost fell over because I thought the guide sort of, you know, just titled it. But they talk of the upper room as the octave or vibrational field above the one that we're operating in now. And they say the Christ itself or the true self always operates there. That's where it exists at that level of consciousness. And their work with us is to realize who we are through this process so that we become who we truly are without operating as the mask or the small self's idea. Maybe this will help. When I was in my early 30s and I was struggling with these teachings and they were just coming in fragments, And I always say I'm 99% sure that I heard this in channel, because I was just starting to channel in those days, because I wrote it down on a piece of paper. And what I heard was, freedom will come when the throne relinquishes its king. And I thought, what the hell does that mean? And it's the whole teaching in some ways, who sits in the throne? And the guides say the small self or the personality self operates in a small kingdom. Everything is about me and what I want or should be, or what people told me should be. And the true self is the one who truly knows, the divine self. When the divine self sits in the throne, that's who's basically running the show. You're operating in the kingdom of, you can call it the kingdom of God. The guides call it the kingdom. And the next book they dictated through me is called The Kingdom. And their definition of the kingdom has always been, you know, the realization of the divine in all manifestation. God is the presence of the divine as all things. And they say the one who knows that is the true self of the Christ itself, because that aspect of self is in union. And that brings up a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, which is, you can't be the light and hold another in darkness. What you damn damns you back, you know? I mean, all of these teachings that are so simple, and they say, you know, every religion has a basis in truth, and they basically talk about it as a common basis, but then, you know, the etymology of religions, or how religions have progressed over time, have moved to a kind of distortion from the basis of the true teachings, which are all they say about unity and the knowing of the presence of God, whatever you want to call God.
Well, it's kind of that small self taking over that control that has kind of dictated some of these religions, you know, and then that's taken to different cultures and different translations. And then it's just like, it's just all discombobulated at that point, you know. But what are ways, I mean, I know throughout all of your books, you know, you talk about these affirmations or these attunements. You say, I know who I am. I know what I am. I know how I serve. I am in my knowing. I am word through all that I see before me. And then you close it with word, I am word. These attunements, are these the things that take us out of the small self and bring us into that Christed state? Like, is that something we constantly have to do? And can we ever just maintain that consciousness?
Well, this is how they've said it before. I mean, the attunements are really, they call them statements of truth. And they say what is true is always true. So the claim, I know who I am, they say is claimed by the true self, who knows who it is. Regardless, when I say, I don't know who the hell I am or what the hell I'm doing, the true self, the divine, as you does know. So at that level, it's always true. Who I am, identity, what I am, manifestation. The divine that has come as you, you know, or me or anyone. And I know how I serve in truth just means how we're expressed as our true self. Now, my assistant, Dustin, you know, who was on the road when we were able to travel, we were on the road a lot. And one day he said, do we always have to say this stuff? You know, and I went, this is a good question. The guide said, well, until you know it, until you know it. But once you know it, there's nothing to say. You know, you're not needing the attunement anymore. You're actually already aligned. They say the realization of those attunements is the manifestation of them. And that's the claim that they work with, which they say is, I have come, I have come, I have come, which is the true self in its expression. The divine has come as you or anyone. So, you know, I understand it as a process. I don't think I'm a spiritual teacher. I don't claim that. I really don't want to be. I have enough problems. I'm not a guru. I have no interest whatsoever. You know, I just like want a good thing on Netflix at the end of the day, and I want my dog, you know, who's being shipped to Maui now after 7 months of in New York City, yeah, with a sitter. So my needs are relatively basic and simple, and I'm not aspiring, you know, but I am a student of this work. And I do trust the guides at this point. They're too consistent in what they're teaching. I mean, they've dictated now 9 books that don't require any editing. They're all spoken. There's no writing involved. The last bunch of them, I suppose the last 4 or more were dictated entirely in front of audiences, you know? So, you know, and it's kind of a remarkable thing when you think about it. But I like that because it helps me to trust it. You know, I don't get to go back and say, well, that's a terrible paragraph, or I would have said it differently, or nobody's going to want to hear this and take it out. It's not my book.
Right. And it's funny listening to, because I actually listen to everything on Audible because I'm a terrible reader. I fall asleep almost instantly when I read. But I listen to it on Audible, and it's just funny listening to it when, you know, they come out and they say, well, Paul doesn't agree with this, or Paul's having a hard time with this. And then you kind of, you know, they answered the question that you're kind of confused about. It's just really neat seeing how it kind of all comes through you. It's very fascinating to me. And I think we all kind of have that ability to hear, or, you know, we have those clairaudient, clairvoyant abilities, but it's just being able to kind of learn to access them. Right. And you are just on fire. It's so amazing to watch. But these attunements, you know, they're not just, you think of affirmations and you think of like the law of attraction when you're saying, well, I have the big house in Maui, like we were talking about before we got on here. It's different than that. I always struggle with the law of attraction because it doesn't always feel like, it feels like we're treating God almost like a genie. I feel like what we're doing when we say these attunements is when we align ourselves with that upper room, as the guides call it. And when we're in accord with all that that is, which brings us in alignment with the divine. And so how is kind of all of that different than that New Age concept of the law of attraction?
Well, I don't think law of attraction is a New Age concept. I don't read other channeled work, so I haven't read those books. And there's a lot of books I'd like to read. I used to buy them all and then they would just sit on the shelf. And for whatever reason, I think I don't pick them up so that I can keep this clean, you know, this whole channel clean. It's not informed. Once in a while, somebody will come to me and say, well, what do your guides say about soul contracts? And I'll say, well, that's Carolyn Mace's work. It's my guides don't speak about them. They won't speak about them in different language or in a different way. With this whole idea of the law of attraction, the guides say that we're in vibrational accord with everything we see and experience, and they say individually and collectively. So what that means to me is people are busy trying to get stuff, and I don't think that this is the teaching of getting stuff. I think it might be the teaching of realizing stuff, which is a little bit different. And what I want to say by that is they say, you know, the true self knows what it requires, or at a soul level, we know what we need. And what we're doing, and they say so much of what we're trying to get, you know, I'm trying to manifest the perfect relationship, the big house with the pool, whatever it is I'm trying to manifest. They say we're generally operating from a list of things that we think we should want or aspire to, which are generally born out of the collective. So it's better to be young than old. It's better to be rich than poor. My guides, this is why I'm never going to be probably on the bestseller list, but my guides say things like, you know, the millionaire and the beggar are both learning lessons of abundance, just in different ways. And it's you who make one better than the other. There are different ways of learning, and who knows what the souls require by way of its learning. So we're still operating from this template of what we think we should want or get. The guides say when we're, you know, when we're operating in the upper room or in the higher way, we're in our knowing, and we're also in the awareness of the source of all things. So we become receptive to our good. We're not trying to hammer it out. There's almost too many examples, but one of the easy ones that they used to give was, you know, there's nothing wrong with the house on the hill. Somebody gets to live there. You know, and they all would also say, and they've said it more and more recently, you can learn through anything. You can learn through that. There's everything can be chosen and learned through. But they say, if you want the house on the hill so that you can be the envy of your neighbors, or to give you a sense of self-worth that you feel that you're lacking, you're creating in fear. And they say the action of fear is to claim more fear. And they say, look at every choice you made because you were afraid and see what it got you, which is more of the same. So the guides say we're already calling everything to us. They call this the mudra of creation. And they once said to somebody, it was in a reading, they initially said, no, imagine you're floating on your belly on a raft in the ocean. Everything exists in this ocean, and this is the process of calling the tide to you. It's really that simple. So, but they also say high, low, and in between. And you can do this with me if you want, and I'll show it to you.
Yes.
The mudra, so you can just do this. It's you're calling the energy to you hand over hand, right? And just notice how your arms feel. And now just make this claim. I have a right to be here.
I have a right to be here.
Feel how your arms feel. And now we're going to try a different claim. No one else has the right to be here but me.
No one else has the right to be here but me.
You feel your arms getting heavier?
Yes.
That's low vibration. So it's a low claim. You can claim it, but then you move into consort or vibrational accord with the low energy that it calls to you. We'll try another one. Just do one more. Everybody has the right to be.
Everybody has the right to be.
If you feel your arms getting lighter, just make a note. See, it's a high claim. It's a universal claim. So when the guides are teaching, and that's just sort of shows you that we're always getting stuff. We can make a low vibrational claim. You know, I'm going to get that person no matter what. Even if he or she doesn't want me back, I'm going to have them. It's a low claim. Do you understand that? You can do it, but you're going to call to you that level of vibration, which is not very high.
Wow. That is so powerful. Yeah, that is I love that so much. And I'm going to use this. This is going to be available. Like, people aren't going to be able to see us, but I'm going to have to post this on Instagram so people can see. That's such a great clarity point when we're, you know, even asking ourselves probably things we need or want or whatever, just being able to do that. That's super powerful.
Where you're coming from with that. Yeah. I don't know that it's what one would do. Should I move to Alaska? Should I move to Detroit? I don't know if it's for that, but I think that you can use it to, I'm going to ask the guides, use it at your discretion. You will understand where you're coming from, where you're coming from, and why you claim what you claim. And they're saying, that's it.
Wow. That's so cool. It's so neat to be able to see you do that here in person too. Really, really cool. Kind of back what you were saying, you know, I loved what you're saying about stuff and just kind of what we put our worth in. And you talk about that a lot in the book of Loving Creation, and that really a lot of that whole chapter on worth, you talk about worth in terms of stuff and what we give power to determine our worth. And I was just wondering if you could speak on that just a little bit when it comes to stuff and how our perception of it, how the small self views that our worth.
Well, the small self, the guides say, knows itself through historical data. It doesn't actually operate in the present moment. It's always accruing evidence to what he or she believes will be or should be, which is always based in history. The guides say you can't have a should without a historical presence. The steak should be cooked this way. Well, says who? You know, it's the idea.
Right.
So that was the question again. Well,
you kind of already talked about the house on the hill and everything like that. I just loved all that you mentioned about just what we kind of put worth in and what defines us as opposed to just kind of what is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. The book that really addresses this is a book called The Book of Love and Creation. No. Is it? Yeah, it is the Book of Love.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that.
It's actually a different one. That one is where they get it. I've not read that book. I dictated that book and I had to type it up from the recordings. It almost killed 500 pages.
Oh my God.
I had to type it, listen to myself. So now I'm another transcriptionist. We just send the recordings out and I don't have to read them until they're in galleys. And then I do read them. No, this is called The Book of Knowing and Worth. And that's the book that really speaks about this in a way that I found really helpful. Because the guides say there, you know, we're always ordering off of the menu of what we believe we're allowed or can have. That's it. We're not going to say, I can have this, or this is okay for me if we don't believe it. We're never going to take something off the shelf in the store that we don't think we're allowed to have or can't afford. Affordability in this case seems to have to do with worth. Now, I'm getting a lot of different lessons in this. You know, right before I left New York, I broke a lease on, I was like living in an apartment that I had never really been happy in. And I thought, you know what? I can break a lease. I can pay up the money. And I got my dream apartment in Manhattan. And I was working in Costa Rica and doing a retreat, and New York City shut down in the middle of the retreat. And it became clear that I wasn't going to go home. I've not been home. I landed in Maui, where a friend found me a place to live. So I had this beautiful apartment waiting for me that I've actually never lived in for a night. You know, I've never been there. My stuff was there without me. And I found myself living in a tiny house with a hot plate here on Maui. And what?
Hey, at least it's not a bad place to live, right?
Not a place I'd ever been and would have chosen to come to. It's where I just ended up, where I was invited. But what I guess my lesson was, I gave away most of the stuff that I had. And I've been living out of a suitcase for 7 months. And I'm fine. You know, I didn't need all the stuff that I thought I needed so that I would be okay in the world. It's just what I've discovered. You know, I've become much, much, much more unattached. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with stuff. I think we're allowed to enjoy it. I've been as poor as anybody I've ever met in my life at different times. And I've learned an enormous amount of being alive through that. But what you finally learn, I hope, is what the source of abundance is. And, you know, if the source of abundance is your partner, your job, you know, what you think you're here for in terms of business, you're actually, the guides would say, you're acting in idolatry. You're making your boss your job, or your boss your God, or something like that. And the idea of knowing the source of all things is just knowing, and the idea of infinite supply, that there is enough. But that's a level of consciousness one again has to come to in order to accept. Other than that, it feels preposterous and wrong-minded. And when I was, you know, too poor to buy a cup of coffee when I was about 26, I would have thought the same. That's preposterous. But your consciousness can change as you expand your idea of what's possible. And until that happens, not much changes.
So powerful. I'm going to switch to the Book of Alchemy here for a second. You talk about how everything is of God, and with the state of the world, you know, I feel like, you know, this is a really great yet hard concept to understand, with everything kind of in disarray a bit. But I love this quote. The guides say, to know God is to be without God and with God, and in darkness and in the light, and the totality of all and the totality of nothing all at once. And you mentioned the only separation from God can occur is like when we're just in denial of God. And the guides say, denial of God is the mask you wear. It's the mask you put upon your brother. Denial of God is your fear. And denial of God is the act against your brothers. Now, God is all things. Fear must be present as God, but fear denies God, so knows itself as separate. And I love this so much, but I'm a little confused at how fear can be of God, but also in denial of God. And I think that goes without saying for everything more than just fear. Like when we think of our ego self and all that it possesses, we can say that, you know, it's all of God, but how do we know what is denying God when it comes to like our political views or our moral compass or the fears we hold due to traumas and or experiences?
I mean, a whole lot of it. And it's partially because I've had so many questions about this stuff. You know, the idea that God is all things or nothing at all is an old concept. It's, you know, it's basis of many religions. 12-step world stuff holds that in the literature as well. But what does that really mean? And the whole question came up because I would say, or somebody would say at a workshop sometime, you know, well, what about fear? If God is all things, what about fear? And they say, well, yes, fear is of God, but denies it. So you can be the daughter of a king and deny it and not claim your inheritance. I am not that. I am not what you say. Well, the parent still recognizes the child, but lets the child go say, okay, if you don't want it, you don't have to have it. You know, I mean, that would be one way, I suspect, of looking at it.
That's a great way. That's free will, right?
We have free will. The guides say we have been gifted with that. They don't override our free will. They don't tell me what to do. I wish they would. Someday.
Me too.
I've used the example before, like, you know, if I want to walk into the middle of a into ongoing traffic, I can. They're not going to stop me. But if I say, is this a good time to cross the street? They may well say, not wise, which still gives me the choice. You see, they're not going to deny me my right to choose. But in their books, and I think in the last couple of books especially, they begin talking about the use of will and aligning will, the will of the personality self or the small self to the divine will. And they speak about that as a braiding. They talk about it as the braiding of the will. So there's this one paradigm, which is thy will, not mine be done, which is, you know, my will is bad or inferior and take it over. And what they're talking about in their books is coming to this place where the will becomes unified, which is I am one with this force as opposed to operating in opposition. So, you know, they honor the will. And even with a lot of their attunements and in the books, they'll say, you know, we require your permission to do this with you. If you want to
absolutely.
Do this, but we're not going to drag you to the altar, you know, unless you want to come. And that's really up to us still.
For sure. And, you know, you even mentioned in the book, you say the denial of God is kind of our biggest problem. And you know, I look at, like, even in the Christian world, like, I think even people in that world that think that they're honoring God in a lot of ways sometimes are denying him as well when we keep making ourselves small or whatever it may be. Like, there's any religion, right? There's things that within the religion still deny God, or we don't even realize it. And then you talk about reclamation, you know, and how everything can be reclaimed that was, you know, was once in denial of God. And so how, when even if we're like unaware of something that we're denying God, we don't even realize it, whether it be self-worth. I mean, self-worth kind of puts that little lens over our eyes where it's like, you can't really, you don't really know, like, oh gosh, I'm denying God because I don't know my worth. This is just what I learned growing up, you know? Yeah. So how can you take something like that and reclaim it as
said, you know, the small self doesn't fix the small self, you know, it's done its best. There's nothing wrong with the small self. It's part of who we are. We just mistake ourselves for the mask that we wear. That's the only problem there. Mm-hmm. But the guys say the true self knows and the small self thinks. And the guides say to know is to realize. So it's at the level of the divine self, I think, that awakening occurs, not trying to force it, and not even through, I suspect, the idea of self-improvement. You know, if I had a better attitude, those are ways we can work with the personality self. But I think that what you're asking is, how do we know these things? Well, I mean, there's some basic moral compasses, I think, that are useful, which is, and this is as it relates to religion, you know, you can't be the light and hold another in darkness. It's really very simple. And what you damn, they say, damns you back. And that includes the self. So if I want to be angry at my body, which I often am, and I'll say, you know, I should be this or I should have done that, I'm actually harming myself, and that's an easy one to say. But the guides also say what you bless blesses you in return. And what they say a blessing is the realization of the presence of the divine upon the thing. It doesn't mean you condone it. It doesn't mean you're pretending it's not upsetting. But to bring the presence of the divine to something, to bless it, is to re-see it and to lift it to a higher level of vibration. That's the purpose of it. And so much of these things, I think, are actually metaphysical statements and metaphysical instructions. It's not, the idea of praying over your food isn't something you do out of a sense of duty. It's a realization of the presence of the divine in what you're eating. And the guides would say, I suspect, because they have said, the only real problem that humanity faces is the denial of the divine, which is we're deciding that God can't be where we say God can't be. And that person, those people, in any of those things. And when we do that, we put those things in darkness. And they say very, very, very simply, what you put in darkness calls you to that darkness. And that's just vibrational accord. It's the same thing. It's that same thing that we did there. So if I want to say those terrible people, I align at the level of terrible people. The guides have said in their teachings, you can't lift the evil man to the upper room because you have made him evil. And that means
the judgment.
exactly your judgment of the man brings you to that level. You can go to the upper room or to that level of consciousness where you're not operating in fear, and judgment is fear. It's just a mask fear wears. And from that place of recognition of the inherent divine in the man, you can lift him, which can also transform him. So they say, you know, you can't make anything holy. Everything already is, but you can deny the divinity in anything. And what you give your attention to at that level, you compound. So imagine, and they've done, I don't remember the scientist, the one who did the experiments with water and the jugs.
Yeah, Emoto, Dr. Emoto.
And so everybody's sending all their negativity into this one jar and blessing the other, and you could see the difference. And the guides say how we hold anything in consciousness informs the thing held.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely. And so how can you help me out on this one? Because I don't know, I'm trying to think about the current state of our world and where we are with COVID and the election and the fear right now and the divisiveness and everything that's happening, and just trying to communicate with people that maybe we see eye to eye, you know, we don't see eye to eye on certain things. Like, how do we reclaim something like COVID or the current state of the world? How do we look at that as divine? How do we become in accord?
I don't know how to say this. I mean, in a lecture they gave a few weeks ago, they say, you think that the ship is capsized, but in fact, the ship has been capsized and it's being righted. And the process we're in right now is of the ship being righted. But that means, if you ever saw the Poseidon Adventure, everything that was on the floor winds up on the ceiling. It's a mess as the thing is being righted, the thing is being transformed. If you look at the guides' books, they say, they've been talking about this since the very beginning, and I Am the Word, which was dictated in 2009, they say humanity is at a time of reckoning, and a reckoning is a facing of oneself and all of one's creations. And they also talk about the role of the United States in this process and the choices that we had to move into a different model for leadership than we had been used to. We've been operating as the conqueror. And they had said at that time, the survival of the country actually will have to do with our ability to become malleable to change. Now, if you go through the books, you can see that these messages are continuing. And in the last several books, they talked about everything that we basically trusted or believed would always be there suddenly being challenged, including social systems, economic systems, religious systems, political systems. I'm assuming medical systems as well, but I don't know if they call that one out. So I have to say that all of these things then become opportunities. I also understand that from what they've said is that, you know, this is in some ways the last big hurrah for fear. You know, in the face of this change, we're being invited to fear. And the action of fear is to claim more of itself, always has been. And fear is the belief in separation from source. And they do say that we're moving towards unification or an awareness of our kinship, if nothing else, you know. So how do you perceive God in these situations? I'm going to see if I can hear anything from them. We'd like to ask this. They're saying we would like to answer this. The true self knows itself beyond situation, knows itself beyond situation. The small self condemns. The small self condemns, decides what should be, fears outcome and relishes fear because it gives it opportunity to act upon it and because it gives it opportunity to act upon it. Now what we would suggest is when all things are seen, is that when all things are seen are products of consciousness, as products of consciousness and constantly changing consciousness and consequently changing consciousness, you will see the level of agreement that is now coming to a new possibility, to a new possibilities of the barnacle concept. It is if the barnacles are being pulled from the ship as the ship rights itself. What will be presented finally? What will be presented finally will be resembling a new ship because what it has contained, what it has disavowed of as God is released. This is the process you want to go now. This is the process you undergo now. Now humanity claims all these things in accord. Vibrational agreement is accord when the collective announces itself as changing. And when the collective announces itself as changing, which in fact is occurring now, which in fact is occurring now, that resistance to change. That resistance to change will make itself known, and again, will make itself known in any way it can. This is how things are healed. This is how things are healed. They must be seen. They must be seen. They must be renown. They must be renown, brought to the light, brought to the light to be reclaimed in a higher order, to be reclaimed in a higher order, octave or octave, the true self as you. The true self as you is already aware of this, is already aware of this. She is unafraid. She is unafraid, and she knows the truth, and she knows the truth without being told, period. You're saying period.
Wow. Wow. Incredible. That is so cool. Thank you. And thank you to the guides for that. That was amazing. And yes, I can see all of those things happening. It does feel like an awakening, and I love the analogy of the ship and how it's being made right. I love going back to that, and it's kind of what they were saying. And you know, I have this theory, and you might think I'm wild and crazy for saying this, but you know, when the world is crazy like it is, and people always assume that it's the end times. You know, you look at the book like Revelation, when it says that, you know, there's going to be all these natural disasters, these plagues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Jesus is going to come riding on the clouds and the whole thing. But I have this theory that the end times are kind of happening now, and they've happened before. Like when we've experienced anything that kind of reawakens us to a new level of consciousness, the Christ comes again in each and every one of us at different times, you know, and yes, maybe collectively it's happening more in a sense now, but that collective consciousness being elevated, or ideologies and mentalities, like the guide said, are being reclaimed through COVID or through some of these natural disasters and through these systems and programs that we're realizing aren't serving us anymore. You know, you mentioned in your book, and like they said, that everything will be made known. Everything will be resurrected in the light. And that's been said in scripture as well. So, you know, seems like it's the right thing. And, you know, it's happening over and over again as the Christ is becoming alive in each of us through our different experiences. And the reclamation that you use in your book, the attunements, I have come, I have come, I have come. Jesus said that. I feel like it's the awakening of the Christ in each of us. Would you agree?
Absolutely. That's the teaching.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. So Paul, I want to say thank you to you and the guides for coming on today, for doing this. This has been such an honor. I'm so grateful, and I'm going to continue to do the work alongside with you through all your books, all your teachings. If you haven't checked out Paul's books, go buy them, download them, stream them. They're so important in this stage of evolution of consciousness, you guys. I can't reiterate that enough. The first book is called I Am the Word, and it will set the stage for you for kind of the others. But his latest book is called Alchemy, and it is just brilliant. Just brilliant. So if you like what you heard today, give Paul a follow on Instagram at paul.selig to learn more about him, more about what he's up to. And just thank you so much for tuning in today, guys. We're now available on Spotify, so that's exciting news. And if you'd like to support the podcast and all that the Love Freak is up to each week, you can do that by giving a donation. All you have to do, just click the link in the description, and it is so appreciated. So thanks again, guys, and we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Love Freak podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe. You can also follow me on Instagram at @thelovefreak_. Don't forget, that's F-R-E-Q. Or to find out more information, you can go to www.thelovefreak.me. Look for a new episode every Tuesday.